So welcome back to the Enneagram Panels podcast. I'm Jim Zartman. I'm here with Enneagram coach Joel Hubbard. And we are here at the sixth panel, which is a very difficult panel to do because you can't get enough of them to really get what the six looks like, because six are estimated to be the highest amount of the population, but they are also the most diverse of any type.
That they are. And I'm so glad you said that, Jim, because I was thinking how the diversity is so key to understanding all the types, because they are all so very different, even though they share these core motivations. But for the six, that is it is so much even more that way. We couldn't get enough sixes on a panel to really characterize that type. My wife happens to be a counterphobic six, and she behaves way different than the phobic sixes. So a counterphobic six runs toward fear, while most phobic sixes, which are the majority of the sixes, run away from it. So that adds another layer to it, among the fact that already sixes are the most diverse of all of them. So it's really interesting. This particular panel did have some diversity in it. You'll hear some who are more expressive, more talkative, more extroverted. You'll get some that are far more introverted, shy, quieter types. Some that tend to be more impulsive as well. There are impulsive sixes that wouldn't appear necessarily to be scared. They're not counterphobic, but they'll go skiing, they'll go skydiving, they'll do those sort of things. But when you ask them about their impulse, what's going on underneath, it always is the same thing. It's this sense that I don't feel really supported. I'm always looking for support. I tend to have this looking at the world as unsafe, right? So everywhere I go, I walk into a room, my attention goes to what's safe, what's unsafe. And all the people that I've ever typed, including people who are from different cultures who are sixes, they say that's where the attention of the mind goes right away. What's going on in this room, this new place I'm going to. Some describe how they look for fire extinguishers almost immediately. Others are looking for, door exits. And for other people, it's not that. It's my attention goes towards people, who's safe, who's unsafe, And so it manifests in all kinds of different ways. But at core, it's this disposition that they see the world as fundamentally unsafe and unsupportive of who they are. And so they're working really hard at trying to create that sense of support and safety.
Because the large population of people in the head triad, especially sixes, there is a lot of targeted, I would almost say manipulative marketing, especially in political seasons and stuff like that, that really try and play on this fear. And so the repercussions of actually not dealing with the motivation of fear, of wanting to be safe, really does impact all of us. There are serious repercussions if we don't deal with our fear. There is the possibility of being manipulated if we don't deal with our fear. And I love one of my closest friends here, Ryan, is on this panel, and he introduced me to surfing. And he talked about how he enjoys going out on the big days and surfing. He goes, because this is real fear, and so much of what I deal with in my life is not real fear.
Oh, that's so interesting.
I thought it was such a fascinating statement, because he's like, when you're on this wave, you actually need to be concerned with the water and not falling off and hitting your head on the board and getting shoved under. And he's like, there's all these things that are actual fear. And he goes, this has actually helped me learn what it's like to deal with the fears that are less real, that are just sort of there poking at me throughout the day.
That is so interesting. It just made me think of another six that said when bad things really actually happen, they said that they feel the most calm in that space. Now, this is not speaking again of all sixes, because it's not true of all sixes. But for this particular one, they said, oh, yeah, for whatever reason, I feel completely calm when disaster is happening. So everybody's losing their minds, and I'm the one who's calm in that place. right? But when everything's calm, I'm the one losing my mind and everybody else is fine, you know?
Well, it's because that's what they actually expect. They expect things to go really wrong.
Yeah.
And so maybe in that situation, they're more calm because the situation is meeting the expectation.
Yeah. And they're already prepared.
They're ready.
They've been preparing for a long time.
Yeah. You sixes out there, you are ready.
Yeah.
When things go wrong, you're like, okay, this is the moment.
Yeah.
I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've got plan A, B, C, D, E, and F all ready to roll out. So this helps us, though, because what we understand about the six is, as you said, sixes are everywhere, right? So this is so helpful for us to understand sixes in middle America, in middle management, in higher, you know, levels of management, wherever they are. They tend to be the ones that think through all the possible worst-case scenario events that could take place. And because they do, it slows things down, for sure. For those who like to move more quickly, it slows things down. But they actually do make things safer. So once again, each type has a gift to offer the world.
Mm-hmm.
They make the world a safer place. They think about the person that's sitting by themselves alone and not being included into the group. At the same time, the six is able to hold hands with, say, the CEO and then the cleaning company. It's a remarkable capacity that they have. They're so full of compassion, one of the most compassionate types. Mm. And so they offer the world a tremendous gift. But the part that sabotages all this sometimes can be this just tendency towards fear and anxiety that the world's unsafe and I'm not supported. So for them, as they move towards growth, health, transformation, they're moving towards faith. They're moving towards a disposition that the world is okay. Things are okay. And it's really about, as you said earlier in another podcast intro that we did, was, you know, trying to get in all of our centers working together. So not just our head or just our heart or just our body, but all three working together. And for the six, that's really critical. And they need to learn how to get out of their head, because otherwise they're spinning and spinning and spinning with fear and anxiety, and get into their body. And when they do, there's a sense of faith and more of a calm that starts to take over. And they still produce a safe world. It's just that now they're not self-sabotaging by overthinking things, you know.
I've heard sixes talk about the impact for them of, you know, taking off their shoes and putting their feet in the grass or in the sand, like that when they get in nature, there is a settling for them.
Mm.
And I think that's really fascinating, because there's something about having the capacity to be in nature and connect in that way that has a settling effect on them, but they're able to access a part of them that sometimes gets silenced by the fear when they are in that space. And the more a six develops the capacity to have that, the more integrated they become.
Mm, yeah. And that integration produces some of the most remarkable people in the world. And they can function at all levels of society. And they can function in a place of peace, genuine sort of, you know, faith, the world is good. But as we said before in another podcast intro, is that when the type learns to do the thing that they are the weakest at, when they do it, it's the most powerful thing. So for a six, when they actually lean into faith, their faith is remarkable. They have this sense of, yes, we can do this, and yes, we can move forward. And by the way, when they do it, they're bringing a lot of people with them, because sixes always bring people with them. They're always thinking about who else is coming. So they're great gatherers, and that's a wonderful gift that they offer when they can, you know, go from that phobic, you know, spinning in the head kind of thing to a place of faith, and then bringing people with them as well.
Right, and just to clarify what you mean when you use the word faith, I don't want people just to interpret that in some kind of a spiritual or religious context, but you've said before that faith is the courage to imagine the positive, even if there's other negative things around, and to act on that imagination despite the very real possibility of failure.
Yeah, I forgot I said that. That's Yeah, that's a good message for the six, I think, because when they display courage, that's the other virtue of the six, by the way, is courage. But when they demonstrate courage, my goodness, there's no one that can demonstrate the awesomeness of courage in the face of fear like a six can.
Right, because bravery is not the lack of fear. It's taking the step in the face of fear.
Yeah.
That is what faith is.
Yeah.
And that's what these people can demonstrate when they have done their work and they are living into it. So let's get into listening to the six panel, talk about what it's like to be them. And remember, the six is so diverse, so we can't come close to scratching the surface of what it's like to be a six in one episode or 10. We'll have to do more with that at some point. But for now, we're going to jump into the six panel.
So different energy about the six panel already, can't you tell? We got some questions for you guys. Talk about where your attention tends to take you. Who would like to jump in? Liz, let's start with Liz. Liz, here you go.
Actually, this question I can answer because we know that the six, your attention takes you to whatever the worst case scenario is all the time.
The problem.
Yeah. Whatever is the worst possible thing that could happen. That I know that for me is true.
Not only that, but mine is always, I've got to figure out all the things that could go wrong. Not that I jump to that, but my mind is, as soon as I see something, I'm automatically working it out in my head. I'm not even aware I'm doing it, but I know there's going to be a problem and I know I need to be ready for it. So I have to know everything there is to know about it. So the way I do that most of the time is I start pumping people with questions. I have to ask 4,000 questions until I am satisfied that I can handle or I can do what I need to do. Otherwise, it's trauma for me.
Well, so yeah, I know we're supposed to go to fear. That's what we do. But what's an example? Like, what's a situation that you could say?
Think about throughout the day. In general, where does your mind take? Obviously, you're busy. You're working. So you're focused on your work. But when you're not directly focused on what the task is at hand, where does your mind tend to take you? As a six, you know, already mentioned as worst case scenario tends to be what functions behind the scene. So even in your line of work, like you're getting ready to do something like a video of something. What's going on in your mind when you're doing that?
Yeah. It's either going to be, okay, what do I need to do to prepare to make sure that we don't fail somehow? Or if I know if everything is in order, then it's what can I do to block myself from thinking that? So a lot of times it's like, what can I do just to like feel inspired or to just get distracted or something? Like first thing in the morning, instead of going right to the office where I have to face all this, I'll be like, let's go to Starbucks and meet somebody and hang out for a while and read and like just distract from that. Just avoid it for a little while until it's like so present that I'm going to just have to jump in and be inspired to do it. Sort of like, how do I trick myself into facing these things? Okay. Yeah, because once you're in it, it's like you're handling it and you're actually more comfortable, but it's the before you're in it. It's like, how do you know, before I have to go up and give this talk or something, how can I distract my mind so that I don't, you know, freak out before the talk or whatever.
I agree with that. Although with me, like for instance, I work in a dental office. So if I have to work with a patient who I know is difficult, I'll push it all over my desk. It'll be the last thing I want to do, but then I'll get irritated because it's hanging over my head. So that's when I turn around and I suck it up and I just pick up the phone and I just do it because I can't stand it hanging over my head. It's a worry. Like I have to worry about it until I get it done. And then once it's done, sometimes it's okay. Sometimes I'm like, wow, that wasn't so bad. And then other times I'm like, oh, thank God that's over.
That's similar.
Yes, that's why I wanted to comment because I agree with that. I'm the same exact way, other than it's kind of rare that I feel okay right away. I have to work it out in my head first. You know, I'll just set that aside for a little while. But then because it's set aside, it's still niggling in the back of my mind. I got to do it because I need it over with because I'm going to worry about it all day.
Yeah, right when you asked that question, I wanted to say I try to do something inspiring to motivate myself. But then I realized somewhere behind there was hiding that fear.
Well, I think going back to the original question, which is where does your attention go? like from a like a workday type perspective, my attention always goes to whatever task or event that's going on that day that I want to do the least. And even if I'm working on something else, I'm always thinking like, oh, we have this meeting at 2 o'clock that I'm not, you know, looking forward to. So, no, you know, that's where my, like, on a day-to-day basis, that's where my attention would go to whatever that thing is that I don't want to do.
It's like, okay, everything's fine. Everything's totally fine. Is it fine? Wait a second. Let me think about it. Yeah. No, it's fine. Oh, my, wait a second. I have this call on Thursday that I have to worry about. Everything's not fine.
That is so interesting. I didn't know that. So there's something in the back of your mind because there's something coming around the corner, something to anticipate.
It could even be akin to like after this talk, I'll be like, oh, that was great. I did really great. I did really great, didn't I? What am I missing? No, no, I was an idiot when I said that one thing. And then I'm going to focus on that.
That's so interesting about how the mind... You know, your minds work in that way. They call this a lot of it is they describe it as ambivalence, like in the back and forth. Not ambivalence in the sense of without passion, but that you can be looking at both sides, all sides of everything, all the time. So that happens to you guys too. You're sort of like exploring all potential angles, sides to something. But that doesn't mean you all do it in the same way because sixes are the most varied of all types. You have all kinds of different reactions and responses to how you do it. For example, when I said I'd like you guys to be on the panel, two of you said, could I get the questions in advance? When I talked with you, Ryan, you were like, I didn't want the questions in advance. It's still the same thing. It's talk about why you didn't want the questions in advance.
Because I'd be freaked out I'd be, you know, thinking about them, you know, well, how could I mess this up? Or what am I going to say? How could I go somewhere? Ooh, I don't want to go there. You know, whatever else. Instead of, oh, I can prepare and then I can get it straight, you know.
And I'm just the opposite. I have to know what's expected before I even want to answer you. So when you sent me the email with the list of questions, that was good. That was good because I had something to run with. I had something to think about. I had something to prepare for. And I could think about what I was going to say. Not knowing that is like walking into a pitch black room and saying, take a right. Although, you know, there might be something in your way, but you're not going to see it. No, that's okay. I want to know. I want to know.
I think I'm kind of in the middle because I got the questions and I looked at them and went, I can't answer any of these questions. And then I just sort of ignored them until last night and went, oh, I probably should look at those again. And then spent most of the day being anxious about what I was going to say or what you were going to ask.
Let's talk about the need for loyalty, which is much more of a thing for the sixes than it is for any other type. Sixes are the most loyal. That's why you're called loyal skeptics, is because you're the most loyal. At the same time, you can be very skeptical. So what's in being loyal? Why is loyalty important to you guys? I'd love to hear about that.
For me, being loyal to other people and vice versa keeps it safe because I can trust that. I can depend on that. I don't have to have 5,000 questions about anybody's loyalty because if I'm loyal to you and you're loyal to me, it's a safe environment.
Yeah, but the motivations there aren't loyalty. That's the problem with that. Because if you're like, okay, I'm going to definitely make friends with this sketchy character so I don't have to be afraid of him. That's not really about loyalty. It's about protection, you know? So, but I totally do the same thing. Like the most difficult people, I'll go to the most trouble to make sure that we're buddies so that I don't have to worry. But I do, there's something weirder that's like, I think deep down there's some, for me, I don't know if this is a six thing, but I just believe everybody is somehow like good or doing their best or like everybody, give everybody the benefit of the doubt. It's like really natural for me. I don't know if that's like a, understand like communication thing. Like I can see in the body language of somebody like most of the time that, you know, if they're behaving in a difficult way, it's like some kind of a defense mechanism or, you know, that underneath we're all good. Like I feel like underneath we're all good pretty much with everybody. So I don't know if that's about loyalty.
I think I'm more on that point, more on the skeptical side. I tend to be more skeptical of people than anything else, of whatever their motivation is or whatever. For me, it's not as much about loyalty as it is like, you know, I guess, well, it's like, I'll be loyal to you so you don't run away. Like, I think like the people that I want to keep around, those are the people I'm going to be loyal to so that I don't, you know, don't lose them and don't make them angry. Don't disappoint them. Don't whatever. So that's more of what it, for me anyway.
So in my life, I've been pretty lucky. Like everybody's been supportive pretty much the whole time. There's like three people ever who weren't supportive. So maybe that plays into me believing that people, you know, and those three people, I'm like, okay, you're not doing a good job, but you would, you know, if you tried a little harder, you would be supportive like the other people. So I don't know. If I didn't get that support my whole life, I probably wouldn't feel like that. Maybe.
I mean, aside from my mother, I didn't have a lot of support. But I do believe that people are good. I believe that people have heart, and I do believe that we're all damaged. We all have brokenness, and I find it easier at this point to be able to overlook someone's shortcomings because I have them too. So, I mean, I don't know if that has anything to do with being a six or not, but I can see things from more than one point of view. I'm not just narrow-minded thinking that you behave like that, so you're a jerk. You know, I do go to that place where, you know, something's not right. Something must have happened. And, you know, this is like the after effects of that. And I'm like trying to figure out like, you know, what actually happened. You know, for me, that's just how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. What you see between the five and the six is there's a whole lot of action going on in the brain, in the thinking center. There's a lot of trying to figure it out. So five, sixes, and sevens, we're always trying to figure out the world through the headspace and understand that. And so that by default means that we tend to be the kinds of people that can think of all kinds of different possibilities. We do it in very different ways, five, sixes, and sevens from each other. But that's what's going on, is that we're able to see all kinds of different possibilities, why someone may have done something, look at this as a puzzle and kind of figure out the puzzle of life. For sixes, it gives you a sense of safety and security to do that, right? Talk about support. It seems most sixes I know, support, feeling supported matters a lot. And that adds to the whole sense of safety and security as well. It doesn't mean you need support from every single person. But talk about what support looks like to you and why it matters.
Being supported means you've heard me. You've heard what I had to say. You gave me your attention. You listened. I'm not necessarily looking for a solution. I'm looking for an ear. I want you to hear me. I want you to understand what I'm saying. And I want you to work with me. I don't want you to shut me off. I don't want you to solve it. I just want you to walk with me. I think that's probably the most important thing that I need.
I have to jump in here because I feel like this is the constant conversation I have with my wife, Patty, and the constant problem she has with me. Yes, oh my goodness. When I heard you say that, I was like, hold on a second. Did Patty just transport up here? My Patty just transport up here. So support looks like that. Thank you for saying that. So support looks like that to you. So that's a good way to maybe answer the question. What does support look like to you, and also why it matters? I mean, safety, security, yes, but maybe talk a little bit more about that as well.
I feel exactly the same way. I spent a lot of my growing up feeling like my feelings didn't count. You know, nobody cared what I was feeling or how I felt about certain things. And so I'm always looking for that, you know, those people that I feel like they do care and they are listening to, you know, just listening. I totally agree with that. It doesn't necessarily, I'm not looking for you to, you know, save the world.
Don't fix it.
No, I just want you to listen and pay attention and understand, you know, try to understand. Not even that you have to totally understand, but at least make the effort.
Yeah, I think it's what you're talking about for me is about communication. It's like you want to speak to people and have them understand, you know, what really get what you're saying. I had an ex-girlfriend who wouldn't get it. And this would be like go on forever. Like my current wife, she'll get it. Right away, she'll understand. Or if she's not paying attention, I'll be like, hello. And then she'll understand, thank you. Or she'll understand. She's like, I understand. I don't have to say anything. No, you're supposed to say, I understand. Okay. And then she's like, okay. But at least we're, I'll just tell her what to say, you know?
Cause, oh no, she's transported into him now. This is
but,
bad.
But it's funny because, I mean, I know she gets it. And so I'm just telling her, you know, exactly what to say. So it'll be okay. Because I feel secure in the situation. Whereas with, you know, in the earlier situations, it was like, I wasn't feeling secure. I was like, well, I'm not being understood. This isn't working out. So support's like being understood.
That's right.
I guess. But then there's like a deeper existential thing about support that's like everybody should be supportive. They should. If they're not, then the world is wrong. The whole world is wrong. Like the whole universe is wrong. Because things, there should be inherently good behind everything, behind everybody. So if they're not ultimately supportive, so they must be. And in most cases, almost all of them, they are.
Yeah. So let's talk about how you grow. What are the things that you guys are doing? Because this group up here, you're very self-aware. You know what you're doing. You can observe yourself doing it. Or at least you have a lot of self-knowledge. The second level after that is really the self-awareness, the ability to see yourself doing it in the moment. Oh, there's my six and it's behaving in this way in this moment. When you're able to catch it, talk about what you're doing to trust yourself more, to trust that worst case scenario may not happen all the time. Before I ask the question, let me just talk a little bit about where the six goes in health, in growth. So as you can see on the numbers here, when the six is highly stressed, the six goes to the three and becomes arrogant and pushy and barks a lot of orders and just loses that tendency towards, because sixes are very compassionate people. Some of the most compassionate of all types are actually sixes. But when the six is highly stressed, that's what ends up happening. When the six relaxes, the six is capable of hearing all the different views, listening to everybody's input, and very open to that, as opposed to like, wait, this is bad. We need to think through what danger could happen. So the six relaxes in a sense of the higher levels of the nine, which is more of a peaceful presence. The thing for sixes is, I mean, it's not all the time, but many times you start off in the worst case scenario. So, you know, you look at the world that way, because they say in the Enneagram literature that the fear that's already within you tends to be projected out onto the world. You're looking for confirmation of that fear. There's got to be a reason for why I'm feeling this way. And so as you're looking, you're going to find it. And one of the ways, and even if you're not able to find it, you might accidentally create it because you're looking for it. So you might poke the bear a little too many times, and then eventually the bear snaps at you and there, I told you, there it is. Yes, I knew it was going to happen. So that's the low side. Right? The high side of the six, which the world values enormously, is you actually are able to find problems and really produce a much safer world because of your existence. And we want to affirm that, just like we did with the fives. We affirm, yes, that's a tremendous gift. Without knowledge, research, information, you know, there'd be a lot of mistakes made. It's a wonderful high side. But the low side can also be a problem, can sabotage your own sort of health and happiness and growth. So what are some things you're doing to lean more into faith and not so much fear? What are some things that you're doing that has maybe helped you to do that?
Of late, this is very recent this week, my son's having a few problems and I have to do something about it. And I don't feel confident. I don't feel like I can do it. I feel like somebody else should do it. And basically, I need someone to pray for him. So in my car, as I was driving, I had a whole conversation with myself where I weighed the possibilities. I kind of was like, well, I have a choice. I have choices. I can ask someone to do this for me, or I can step out and do it myself. And I can do it with confidence if I continue to tell myself I can do it instead of telling myself it's not going to work, it's not going to help, it's not going to make a difference. So I spent probably 20 minutes talking to myself about, okay, so my choice is I either do it or have someone else do it, and I got nothing to lose. What am I going to lose? If it doesn't work, I can always ask somebody. So I made the decision that I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it confidently, and we're going to see what happens. And if it doesn't work, it's okay, because I still have options. So I really have to push myself. I have to convince myself that I'm capable, because I think the worst part of it is not feeling like I can. And you know, giving myself permission without someone saying you can do it, giving myself permission to do it helps me feel more confident, because I came to that decision myself.
You talked about the morning where you have a little routine to, you know, if I did this thing for a little while where I would I have a 4-year-old who was always crazy in the morning. I did this thing where we'll watch a nature show on TV. I'll drink tea and we have a little snack first thing. Or I'll read and he'll play next to me. And if we just do something like that, annoyingly, that does seem to make a big difference. Or at night, if I read before bed, no matter how late or whatever it is, read something spiritual before bed, that seems to make a difference. So we're getting into you're supposed to meditate and that's supposed to help. Does that answer the question? Anything?
I was thinking when they were answering the previous question, talking about, seeing the good in everyone and seeing other people's positions. To me, that sort of sounds like where, you should be going. But I honestly, that's kind of where I'm struggling. I'm stuck. I don't know how to go. I can definitely go to the 3. I can go to the low side. I do it every day at work. I'm I go to work, I'm going to do everything. I don't care how much work you give me. I'm going to get everything done. I definitely see that, but I have not figured out how to go the other way.
What's worse that could happen?
I don't know.
I mean, I know, obviously, I've known exercise, just doing that helps a lot. I don't know if that's a cop-out, though, because you're kind of just you're doing something different that's relieving your whole system. I don't know if that helps. But if I know something tough is coming up and I don't know what the solution is to it, I know that I should, just relax, and you can't change, what's coming up in the future. You can't change it. But that just being able just to relax, I guess just exercising and doing all those things just brings the whole system down to a level of relaxation. But there's no mental thing where I can be I'm not in control. I have faith. It's going to be fine. That's pretty rare if that happens. I mean, that would be the thought process.
Another thing that I do is all day long, I have conversations with God. And I find that if I talk to him about something that's on my mind that I need to do and I don't want to do it, I feel better and I feel that it wasn't as bad as I thought it could be in my mind. It's always oh, I did that. I did that. So it's not as scary the next time I have to do something, if I follow that process.
Yeah. And just for context for everybody, I think the point here is that when we get anxious about something, we get so anxious that it's debilitating. Debilitating anxiety. It could be just about something that's not even really a big deal. That's why we're trying to figure out how to get around this.
Yeah. And that's the 6. They're at the anchor point of the head triad, which the head triad people tend to deal primarily with the emotion of anxiety. That's predominantly what shows up, more so than the other emotions. It's not that 6s don't feel other emotions. We feel all the emotions. It's just that's the one that tends to function for head types more so. Patty, before I jump into some of the coaching things that might be helpful for you guys as 6s, I just want to hear from you as well. Patty is a counterphobic 6, which is, there's 6s and counterphobic 6s are very rare. Counterphobic 6s are less common than the phobic 6s. And so what counterphobic means is that type of 6 runs at the fear rather than running away from the fear. More commonly does that. It's not that there aren't fears that counterphobic 6s run from, but generally they do that. So counterphobic sisters can be found as correctional officers. They can be found at police. They do the skydiving. Patty is like all into that, was always into that, constantly facing the fears. So Patty, talk about like, what are some of the things you're learning that can sort of hack that pattern and lean more into trust, more into faith, and that even running at the fear isn't the solution either, because counterphobic sixes run at the fear, but that doesn't mean they don't continually deal with fear. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I think over time and growing and being in the life situation I'm in with being married to you and doing, you know, ministry and volunteer work, in a lot of ways, I feel like I definitely go to God, and I think I'm reminded of a lot of things that I tend to lean towards, like certain verses that have stayed with me over the years that have been like, aha, okay, now that I'm learning about the six, it makes sense. Some of the things that have stayed with me and have been a treasure to me and have helped me in understanding maybe more of my identity in Christ or my faith. I definitely do inner therapy in my mind. For me, I feel like there is an anchor. I don't fully understand it. I feel like there's an anchor of what I grew up with that for some reason brings me back to some of those things that have meant a lot to me. And understanding myself and trying to love myself and grow. I do love music, stories being told where things are, you know, real and we're able to just feel that emotion. I need to feel that emotion. It gives me hope. I love music that is hopeful. I love documentaries and real life history and stories. I feel the journey with them and I feel the hope, and I feel the overcoming. So I love stories that are overcoming. I don't know. It just like washes over me and it feels good. And I can feel the emotions and go through it with them and know that anything is possible. So I'm not carrying stuff. I'm not reactive to stuff. I don't want to just be reactive. So I've been trying to, over the years, just step back. Not necessarily think through, but just give myself space from things so that I can get the proper attitude, spirit. And so I find that if I do space a little bit between a situation or a feeling that I might be having where I'm connecting dots that I should not be connecting because they're incomplete and they're not proven. And I don't want to go there with that anymore because that ends up spiraling. So that ends up bringing me to a good place where then I can work through something with somebody or myself. I'm able to do that and I give myself space and sit with it rather than I'm trying not to be reactive with stuff because I don't do good in that quick space. Then I'm like, you know, I'm sharp and I'm quick and I feel offended and I take hurt. And when I sit back and I'm able to look back on it, I realize that person is a beautiful person. And I looked at something the wrong way, or, you know, I don't want to go there with people or a situation.
The thing that's unseen by sixes and the things that may make sense to kind of understand the path is that a lot of things that Patty was talking about in terms of the anchor verses that she feels from the Bible that have been very, very helpful. Not trying to solve things in the mind. All those things that you have all done and stumbled on at different times is what the Enneagram gives us in terms of understanding about how to hack the pattern. For the six, it's never about, and for the five, and for the seven, it's never about solving the problem in your head. The more you try to solve the fear in your head, the more you actually create more fear. Because the very act of trying to spin or act in the mind creates the anxiety. So it's a vicious cycle because the theory in the Enneagram is that you're born with your type. It's not that you're born with a low side of the type or the patterns that sabotage, you know, your own success. That's environmental. But you're sort of born the way you are. And we all know that if you have siblings, and even if you're raised the same way by your parents as siblings, you all respond very differently and you look differently. So The six was born already with a predisposition towards looking for danger in the world. What happens is because you're in your head, it's already, you've got a little bit of anxiety that you're born with. And then in addition to that, you spend so much time in your head, which creates more anxiety, which then you try to resolve by more thoughts and more thinking, which creates more anxiety. And that cycle just, and that's the spinning. That's what you're experiencing is the spinning. And so the way out is actually to stop that completely. Like, it's not going to ever be resolved up here. It's by getting into your body. That's what they call grounding patterns or grounding techniques. So the spiritual experiences that Patty has described, that you guys have had, are spiritual experiences that cause you to leave that cycle and get into the emotions. So when Patty, you talk about watching stuff that evokes emotions, I have never understood why you did that for years of marriage. I would never watch those with you. I was like, this is like, why would you want to do that? There's no rationality to that. Why would you want to spend time crying? So I didn't want to watch those. She actually got there before I did, because she was doing this unaware that that's actually the pattern that the six needs to engage in, is doing stuff that evokes emotions. Why? Because it gets you out of here and it gets you in touch with something else. And so while she's watching, she's not thinking and caught up in the thought of the emotion. Why am I thinking about the emotion? She's feeling the emotion. She's crying through the movie because the story has taken her out of her own headspace and put her into more of the heart space. Okay. So that's one pattern that's oftentimes unknown to the six. The second one is getting into your body by action, as you just said, Patty, is getting into action. The very act of getting into action is getting out of the brain, no longer thinking about this. I'm not going to think about, I'm not going to solve this. I'm going to get into action. So the more grounding techniques you can practice by saying, okay, in this moment right now, I'm exiting the mind space and I'm getting into the body. So what is my body feeling right now in this moment? Well, it feels the seat I'm sitting on. It feels the ground underneath my feet. And I'm just going to be very present to my body right now. I'm not going to be present to my mind. I'm going to be present right here in this moment. And the continual pattern to arrest yourself in the moment when your mind is spinning, nope, right back down, right back in this moment. And now back into action, you know, and getting back into that place stops the pattern, interrupts it. And it may be multiple times that you have to do it before it becomes something that's habitual and your system starts to go, oh, I get what we're doing here. Because as it is with the one, you feed the inner critic. You guys heard the one panel. The one panel has to do with the inner critic. The more they actually perfect and try to be perfect, the more that the inner critic becomes louder in their system. It's the same thing for every type has one of those. Yours is the more you feed the fear, the anxiety, worst case scenario, planning, thinking, well, the more the thing it comes alive within you. So it's always going against the type that then hacks that pattern. And it's frustrating because when you hack it and you get into that place of peace, guess what you're going to do? Go right back to the head. How did that work? That's a fascinating thing. I've got to solve this. How did that happen? And you go right back to your head. Instead of acknowledging there was no thought that got me there, it was getting into my heart space. You know, when you're playing with your son, when you're in that place, your heart is connected, right? You're describing that as that's one of the things that's sort of centering. It's not efficient. You're not getting anything done.
Definitely not.
It can be like, but that's that, and that is what actually slows the system down, slows the mind down. You stop spinning and you're present. And that's one of the techniques as well, is doing things like that.
Yeah, please. So what's weird about, you said then we go back to the head. It's kind of like, you know, football players, they have to huddle to just regroup and debrief. Okay, what's going on here? And it's weird because it's like probably our sense of self almost lives in the head. So we can go live through this body experience and feel really present, feel great. But then just to get back in touch with, it's like it's very hard to be ourself, you know, exist as a self in action. It's like we have to kind of pull back out and be like, whoa, what was that? Okay, let's go back in again. And I think maybe there's something about becoming, you know, sentient inside the action self instead of just in the head self.
Yeah, absolutely. Because body types already know this. There is a wisdom about that motion that body types intuit. So, and they do that. And that's what we can learn from each other is watch how the different types actually do and not so much think in that space. And by the way, this applies to the fives. I didn't say as much in terms of coaching for the fives, but this is exactly what all head types need to practice. So when you were talking about singing, Ron, and that connects the heart, that's the thing that stops the cycle. And you were describing that. That's precisely what happens. So it's not about thinking about why am I feeling this emotion, but it's no, I'm feeling the emotion and I'm embracing the thought. So I'm shutting this off intentionally, the rationalization, and I'm experiencing emotion. Heart types know this. Fours, do I have any fours in the room? Fours know this without thought. It's like, of course you feel. Of course, why are you thinking, rationalizing about feeling? You feel. And that's what I want to bring attention to is the sixes. You're already doing things. It's just you're not aware that you're already figuring some of this out. So you're bringing attention to, I'm already succeeding in certain areas of my life. All right. So instead of focusing on, how did I do? Did I perform poorly? Instead of focusing on that, you're actually paying attention to the successes you've had and you're building on those. You're drawing energy from that space so that you can continue to do the things that are actually working. It's just that the natural, the groove, you've well-worn groove for you sixes is go back to the thinking again. Geez, I did that really well. Why? How did I do that? You know, and instead of just like, oh, that felt good and my body loves it and my heart loves it. That's great. And that's where it stops, you know. Yeah. 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 Questions? Yeah.
So I was thinking about all you guys are saying and wondering, when we try to grow, do you take risks when you push ahead and not knowing what's in front of you? But
my mindset is I really don't want to be limited. And so that stays with me. Like I want to experience things with life. I always want to feel like I'm moving forward. And it doesn't mean that I am like, yeah, let's go. And I will research something. I will read the contract in full before I sign it. Like I will, you know, look, I remember buying our first house. I had a book and I found a whole book on bank vocabulary. Like I wanted to understand what all the terms meant. So I knew what I was dealing with beforehand. But at the same time, I will take a step of faith. I want to be able to go there. I don't want to miss out on something. You know, it's like some, you know, the river only comes by once. You never step in the same river. The water's always flowing. And so to me, I don't want to miss some of those opportunities. So I don't want to live without faith in my life of taking steps. And I want to be able to look back and see how far I've come with stuff and how far I've maybe brought my son and my family with me and stuff and leave kind of a legacy like that. And so I work kind of like against the grain at times, but I still find I do my due diligence, but I will go in the other direction if I feel like there's a step of faith I need to take. And I'll take a risk like in public with different things. I'll be like, well, I'll never see these people again, so I will do this. And if I fall, I fall. If I fail, I fail. If I make a fool of myself, I'll never see them again. And yet I get a chance to try something fun, you know, and different.
But the risk thing, so like I definitely do a lot of risky sports and things like that. But those are calculated. Like they don't really consider those risks. You know, I'm being careful. But I have done a few times in my life, taken some big risks. Like if I'm not going to go into detail, but if you can think of, you know, exposing something about yourself to the last person you'd want to know about it, and having a kid was had a similar effect to the other thing. These type of risks have been like identity shattering, and they took years, 3-4 years, to recover from. And to build back up. And it's weird because it's not really the same problem as the six problem, because the six problem is just being anxious about everything. But those kind of risks, it's like almost like we're blind to those risks. We're not thinking like, oh, this is something I'm anxious about. This is just something you jump off this cliff and try something and then you have to figure it out. Figure it out, yeah. Well, but it's good to do.
Well, no, that's right, because it's not as though you sixes haven't done that before, that every aspect of all your entire life is all filled with constant fear and hesitancy to do anything. You have actually done things that were very courageous, and so you draw again on those things. I have done those things. I've jumped before I looked, and it turned out okay.
Just could you share a time or an experience where you felt like at your absolute best or healthiest in spite of everything else and the fears that run around?
I mean, like a year ago, I just felt like super grounded, like almost like a different person. I don't know what it was. It was just timing was good or something, with maybe work was going well and I was exercising enough and the weather was good. And I don't know what all it was, but yes, it felt great. It felt like I was leaving the six world. I was really just like, you know, felt grounded, felt just... I think everything got me to this place of being like, pass off the anxieties, like not taking the anxiety seriously, being like that type of person who's not worried. Somehow everything just led to this crescendo where I was like that.
For me, I think right now is probably my best time. I have an incredible amount of things going on that are not good, that are really, really stressful. And if this were 5 years ago, I would be obsessing. Things are not good. It's very stressful, but I'm okay. I'm just doing what I got to do, and I'm okay. I'm peaceful. Like, who are you?
It's like the opposite of a crisis.
Yes, absolutely. Quite okay, even though it's not good.
Just in closing, it's a reminder that the goal is not to be perfect and never experiencing fear or losing it and getting into your brain space. Recognizing you have gifts like this, like moments where this is not driving your system, but knowing how to get back to health, that's the key. It's not staying in that place of, I am feeling amazing, I'm not struggling, I'm not having... That's wonderful if we could stay there all the time, but that's not reality for anybody. But it's having a path to be able to get back to the place of health. That's key. And so once again, it's the practicing of the getting into your heart space. What touches your heart? What makes you weep? What makes you happy? What makes you lose yourself because you're having so much fun? Those are the things that are important for you to ask yourself so that you can get back to that place. What are the things that help me to get into, you know, out of my head? I need to get into action. I need to get into motion and not think about these things. I need to be grounded. So how do I do that and get back to that place again? Those are the habits that each one of you figure out how to do and tailor to your own specific six type, because even though you're sixes, you're very unique. And so what works for you in getting you to that place? And that's important, because the anxiety will start to create even physical symptoms. And so the physical symptoms start to show up, and that's an indication, my type. One of the things I know immediately for me is my stomach gets tight. That's an indication for me to become self-aware in the moment. What's going on that my stomach is tight right now? So deep breaths. You get it in your shoulders? Okay, so you get it up here. Yeah. All right. So that's the awareness of I'm getting tense again. What's going on? That's causing this. Oh, it's because I'm thinking about this thing that's coming up on Thursday, that I have a phone call or I have a meeting and it's scaring me. So now back to my body and back to my heart. What's my heart feeling right now? How do I access the emotions? And then how do I get back into my body through grounding techniques and then through action? So that's it. And thank you, sixes.
Well, I cannot believe we are getting so close to the end of season two, but we are already planning some things for season three that I think are going to be really helpful. We are just starting to scratch the surface of the growth process. But before we do that, if you've been going on this journey and you're not sure where you land and you'd really like to find out, you can do a typing interview with Joel. It's $150. You can contact Joel through his website, www.joelhubbard.com, and you could set up a typing interview over the phone, over Skype, and it will help you get set on the right path. You can also contact Joel there to do an event, come speak, coaching, whatever else you need to, get a hold of him. If you need to get a hold of me, my site is www.jimzartman.com. My wife and I are offering specifically some couples coaching so that you can better design the relationship you want. Make it as healthy as possible so you can enjoy it and not just fix things once they go wrong. If you haven't joined our Facebook page yet, you can do that because we will have some content and some questions and some things to process in between seasons because there will be a gap between the two seasons. So join us at the Enneagram Panels Facebook page. This show is produced by me, Jim Zartman, at Talkie Record Studios in Lynn, Massachusetts, and made possible by Vine 39 Church in Stoneham, Massachusetts. Thank you to all of you who have left reviews on iTunes. It helps people find the show. And you can also let people know it's now available on all the different platforms. But we will leave it there for now and see you back for the season finale with the 7-panel next week.